Hey everyone, welcome to the Soul Surrender Show. I am your host, Skyler Scott. Today I have a guest with me. This is Scott Allen, Dr. Scott Allen.
Hello everybody.
And we are going to discuss a little bit about plant medicine and ketamine and how it's being used in the medical field to help treat things like addiction, it treats depression, all sorts of things. So Scott, this is my fourth podcast and you are my first guest. So this is a new format. It is nice having someone to talk to because the camera, you know, never smiles at me and never talks back. So,
well, I'm honored to be here.
Well, and talk back to me anytime you want as we go. So in my very first podcast, I shared some of my experience with plant medicine. I shared some things. I encourage people to check out Fantastic Fungi, which is the first documentary I saw, which really explained a lot about the use of psilocybin, things like that. And I shared some information, but it's nice to have someone on, a doctor, you know, who's worked with these medicines, worked with ketamine. And I'll let you get into some of those things, what led you into that area, and just results you've seen in the people that you work with. Some of the things that really stood out to me in the Fantastic Fungi documentary is back in the 50s and 60s, they were already doing a lot of research on psilocybin, other psychedelics, things like that. But they found with psilocybin, both in the US and even other countries, that there were people that could experience psilocybin once or twice, people that were on antidepressants and maybe had been on them for a long time. And some people never even needed their antidepressants again. During that time period, they pointed out in the documentary that when they looked at this, there was some political things going on, because they said, look, if you can use psilocybin once or twice and never need some of these other medications, that's problematic. More, it's something that they couldn't patent. So it's something that, you know, psilocybin and even cannabis went straight into like the class one drugs with heroin and things like that. Yeah. And so all of that was just kind of put aside. And so now there was a point where there was just like, you would see these documentaries coming out and these little articles. I'm at the point now where I go on and I'm finding new articles all the time that talk about these things and refer to them as miracle drugs, even to help people with like a number of things, help them kind of reconnect with their brains, like it lights things up. That's the stuff we want to get into, and hopefully you can make it even a little more eloquent and make sense for me. But so
I'll do my best.
Go ahead. So I guess to start off with, you have a ketamine clinic currently. Talk to me what got you to this point to where you're in that.
Correct. So I'm an anesthesiologist. I've been practicing anesthesiology since about 2012. In 2018, I started a ketamine clinic. So ketamine is an anesthesia medication. It's been used safely in the operating room since the 1960s. And about 20, 25 years ago, some people started figuring out that it was particularly useful at relieving symptoms of depression. So for people with suicidal ideation, depression, PTSD, anxiety, ketamine has really helped alleviate a lot of their symptoms. And ketamine is similar to a lot of psychedelics in that it creates this non-ordinary state of consciousness. It can be very visionary. It can be very insightful to your life. So it overlaps with some of the natural plant medicines like psilocybin, ayahuasca, it's not the same as some of the classic psychedelics like DMT, psilocybin, LSD, but it shares some of the similar properties. Right?
Are there things that you feel ketamine is a little unique or does a little better than perhaps like psilocybin mushrooms?
Yeah, so you were getting into this a little bit earlier, where in the 1960s there was a lot of interest in, you know, psilocybin and LSD, but because of the countercultural movement, the opposition to the war in Vietnam, the association of LSD with the opposition,
right,
to the war in Vietnam,
there was a feeling like these drugs are making people rebel against the powers that be.
Yeah, and we're in a little different era right now where I think we've done the rebelling that we're gonna do,
yeah,
as a society. And we're starting to use
these, speak for yourself, but we'll see.
But we're starting to use these medicines less as a tool to opening up our cultural awareness. And it's more, we're more using them as a tool to kind of help regain a better balance with our minds.
Yeah, and to me, it was almost like it gave me more self-awareness. Because like you're talking about, it gets you in this state where it's like the ego or whatever it is, that part of your brain just kind of shuts down. And for a minute, you can just sit and sit with what it is. What exactly happens to the brain with psilocybin or with ketamine?
Yeah, so I'll just kind of lump all the different medications that we're talking about under the umbrella of psychedelics, just for ease. You know, they all have some differences and some strengths and benefits. But when you're talking about psychedelics in general, the thing that they usually do is they increase brain connectivity. So they help different parts of your brain start speaking to each other that weren't speaking to each other before. That's by and large one of the biggest things that psychedelics do for our individual brains. Now, you can start thinking that if you think of it as if your brain were an egg. You know, we all saw those commercials like, this is your brain.
Yeah, this is your brain on drugs. Absolutely.
Okay, and so I'm going to kind of tweak that analogy a little bit. So your brain being an egg is kind of contained, like it's got this hard shell around it for most of the time. And that hard shell kind of makes our thought patterns, and sometimes those thought patterns aren't very productive. They can be circular, they can ruminate, they can go over and over. So what psychedelics do is they kind of open up that shell so that it breaks that shell open to allow the rest of your brain to, you know, to start like going where it needs to go. And so it's not so tightly contained anymore.
Yeah. Some of the research I did talked about when it comes to addiction, that's one of the reasons that psychedelics can be so beneficial, because you talk about like we get patterns. Mm-hmm. So our brain will have even triggers to where this is how the brain communicates. This part talks to this part, then this part, and it goes dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. And it makes almost like a cow trail or a path that it just wants to continually follow, whether it's the most logical or healthy thing or not. But that was my experience. It's like when I experienced psychedelics for the first time and doing it in a safe environment and an intentional way to kind of ground myself, it's like my whole brain lit up. Mm-hmm. And you talk about now the brain, different parts can now communicate.
Exactly. Yeah.
So new paths. So with addiction, you know, people have those triggers where, but, this happens, you have a cigarette in your mouth.
Yeah.
And things like that. So with the clinic, and I'll even share some of my experience, because I have done ketamine at the clinic, and it was just unbelievable. When I'll say this, when I first talked a little bit about psilocybin and ketamine, even a lot of followers didn't know a lot about it. We're like, okay, now is this addictive? Do you use this all the time? And in reality, I've only done psilocybin a few times, and then I did some rounds of ketamine. Mm-hmm. But it is something that people, I guess, kind of do in a series. Let's talk about that first. What does it look like when someone comes in for like a round of ketamine at your clinic?
Yeah, so ketamine in general, there's different ways of doing it, but most clinics that you go to, they do a series of 6 infusions. Mm-hmm. So a typical patient, somebody who's been struggling with depression for a lot of years, has been on lots of different antidepressant medications, is still stuck in those patterns, so they'll come to the clinic. We do IV infusions. Some people do intramuscular infusions. Some people do nasal sprays. We found IV infusions to be usually the most beneficial for relieving the most depressive symptoms. Plus, doing it in an infusion manner tends to help people who, it's just like a better experience. And I'll get back to this in a second, where a big part of psychedelics is the quality of the psychedelic experience often determines the degree of depression relief. And we'll talk about that in a little
bit. So environment, yes.
Yeah.
That space, it's a space where you want to make sure that you're safe, even with the right people, the right...
Yeah, and the ambiance, too. You want it in this nice, relaxing environment. You want it, like, good lighting, soft light. You want nice music. You want friendly people who have been there before, you know. Mm-hmm. Most people, most patients want to know that you've actually experienced the medication yourself so that you can help relate to them better. And that's a key quality of the treatment. So an IV infusion lasts usually about an hour and a half. About a half hour of that is actually getting the medication. And then the last about 45 minutes is what we call integration. So you talk about the experience. So you'll have this visionary experience. And then as you're coming down, you'll talk about it. And that can be called integration. That can be called ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. There's different terminology of using it. But that's another key component of it, is having the a space to unpack the experience with somebody else. Because otherwise it can be a very interesting experience, but you might not get very long lasting benefit, unless you actually start applying those benefits into your, those insights into your daily life.
So during the integration period, I almost look at, there's almost like a landing period where psychedelics, where you kind of had that initial journey, you process things, but that landing period, at that point you have, you know, someone there holding space, talking through, processing stuff.
Yeah.
And after like six rounds, that's generally what you do. Do some people still come in and use ketamine like every quarter or once a year, or what is?
Yeah, we'll have people who, and it kind of depends where you're at in your life. Some people who have really severe mental health disorders are coming back maybe monthly. Some people do six treatments and we never see them again, and they're, you know, doing better. You know?
Right.
You know, even after ketamine treatment, it, you know, life is still hard. You're going to have ups and downs, and, you know, nobody's life is perfect. And we don't want to be perfect. We don't want to be in bliss all the time. Otherwise, we get bored with that.
Yeah.
And so,
like, it's a waltz. There's the up-down part.
Yeah, there's the up-down part of it. But I think ketamine does get you out of the lowest lows and helps bring you up out of that.
Yeah, my experience, so I had done psilocybin, which was just a big opener. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that point, there was just like a lot of trauma that just surfaced. And I was able to kind of shed that. Yeah. You know, religious trauma and just things I'd gone through in my life. And it was amazing that like a lot of that stuff during the journey would come up, and I was able to just sit with it and clear it. And so it was an amazing way to just kind of move that energy. Ketamine was so similar, but then again, ketamine was, it really was beautiful in the situation. I mean, when I did at your clinic, doing it with the IV, it was really, really smooth. I was really comfortable. But ketamine to me also kind of helped button up and kind of bring together other things that I had processed and some more integration. And at one point, I remember we were chatting a couple weeks ago at lunch, but you talked about, you know, it's been just so powerful for depression. And so in my life, I had some underlying depression, but it was something that I feel like psychedelics, people talk about, you know, you want to do them all the time. And I'm like, no way. It brings stuff up.
It's a pretty overwhelming experience. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of a purge. So one thing that's, you know, having benefited so much from just a few experience with psychedelics, one thing that means a lot to me is that it's starting to be used, and it's legal for treatment in several states now, and it's something that's just opening up. What can you tell us about like the legal aspects of what's going on with these medicines?
Yeah, so ketamine being a FDA approved medication, so it's a Schedule III medication, which means it's controlled. You can only get it by a prescription by a physician. Mm-hmm. Is legal to be given in a clinic, and sometimes it can be given as a prescription to take home. Very, very rarely, but usually you get it in a controlled environment in a clinic.
At this point, is it in most states or?
I'm pretty sure every state has access to some sort of clinic. Every state's going to have a different, you know, regulation around it. But yeah, most states are going to have ketamine clinics where you can go in and get this kind of treatment.
Because like you said, ketamine being used in the medical field isn't new. But no. They found that it's so beneficial.
Correct, yeah. Now, psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in mushrooms, which I'm sure you've talked about, it's getting more legal, but it's still illegal at a federal level. So just this last week, Utah passed a new law establishing a framework for limited psilocybin use in clinics, which is interesting. And we're not quite sure how that's gonna play out. But there's going to be some clinics in Utah where it's going to be legal to take psilocybin. Now, also in Utah, there are a couple clinics where you can do psilocybin under a religious exemption, and you're not going to get in trouble for it. Mm-hmm. But that's still kind of a legal gray area right now.
So. I've heard that that's the case in many states. Mm-hmm. You know, I was even looking at Oregon, the state of Washington. I think Oregon's the furthest along as far as, you know, the access to psilocybin. Washington, even in Washington state where they've, you know, passed some things have gone up, some things have stalled, but it is somewhat of a gray area. But yeah, the religious exception is something that I guess still kind of lands there, but like in Utah, you know, there's the United Assembly Church.
The Divine Assembly.
The Divine, in Utah, there's the Divine Assembly Church, which lets people use it as a way of, you know, they say that it's a way to access my spirituality. It's a religious thing. And so it's used in that context.
Well, it really is. And for better or worse, Utah, having the influence of the LDS Church, has a pretty good lead on other states in terms of using psilocybin.
Yeah.
Because of that religious aspect and the spiritual aspect.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, even with, because it's a unique state, mm-hmm. you know, and again, having a religion that's so strong and influences so much of the community. One interesting thing about Utah is that even like LGBT rights and human mm-hmm. rights, they're actually a little more protected sometimes because they kind of tied it into religious rights.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And that's what, so the church is trying to preserve their, you know, religious landscape that they want. And in so doing, they're like, yeah, if you are a church or if you have a religious bent to you, we want to support you. So in some arenas, the church has been kind of proactive in supporting other religious habits because it's good for the LDS Church too. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So getting back to that. So there are ways to legally access psilocybin if you do it under a religious exemption. We're still working out that framework. Ketamine's legal. And there's a lot of ketamine clinics out there. It's, you know, not hard to find one right now. Not all are created equal. And like you were saying, you want to do it in a safe and supportive environment. And some places you might be getting ketamine out of the back of a chiropractor's office, which, you know, with varying results with it. And it could be a terrifying experience if you've had significant trauma, or it could be, you know, beautiful. You just never know. But getting back to the quality of the experience, whether it's psilocybin, whether it's ayahuasca, DMT, or anything like that, you want to do it in a place where you feel supported, where you feel safe, where you feel like people aren't going to take advantage of you, where you feel like people are understanding where you're at, where you feel like they're going to help you through that process. Because if you can let your mind go into that experience and let go into wherever your mind wants to go, that's where you're going to find the greatest healing. If you're holding on, if you're white knuckling through the experiences, you're being shot off through the K-hole, you're usually not going to get long-term benefit from you. So that's why I encourage people to seek out a place where people are there with you the whole time.
And that's exactly what I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, the environment, feeling supported, feeling safe, because it really, like with psilocybin, you know, sometimes you'll feel it and people they'll kind of fight the medicine. They won't, you know, they won't quite let go, but it really is a process of just almost surrendering and letting go. And then when you do, that's when just like things come up, things come out. And again, it was like, even ketamine, I just remember it was like, I was just shedding things and even ideas would come up and I would look at it and go, wow. Like I've always held on to this construct. Uh-huh. Where did it come from?
Yeah.
And it didn't come from here. And it doesn't resonate with me. And to be able to let go of deeply rooted mm-hmm. constructs, and even in stuff that, you know, if there's things that you don't relate to that you were raised in, it doesn't take any of that away, but it gives you the ability to just step away and just look at everything and get a little more grounded with what you resonate with.
Yeah, and I like how you brought that up because once people start doing psychedelics, they start questioning a lot of things, you know, because it is so mind-blowing and it sometimes makes people question what's real and what's not. And that's why I'm a huge fan of what we call a psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, and legally we do that under the framework of ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. So these are psychotherapists who have taken extra training in helping people navigate the ketamine space.
Right.
Because like, yeah, once you've shed a lot of these deep core values, you're like, okay, well, what am I left with? Like what really is me? What's going to serve me going forward? Like you can't just like shed everything and then function in this world because, you know, you're going to have you'll end up, you know, at Burning Man naked doing something like that.
It's so disoriented. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fun for a weekend, but a lot of people, that's where they just kind of end up, you know, naked in the desert for a while.
And that's something I talked about earlier. I said, you know, the experiences I've had, all of them were not, hey, I want to trip. I want to have, you know, even in the initial time I did it, my initial experience with psilocybin, when I started to see kind of the sacred geometry they talk about, the things you see, those shapes and stuff like that. That part of it, like I didn't even want, like it was a little weird at first, but as I relaxed into it, I was able to kind of let go of that. And, And in this first video, I just pointed out, you know, people go, you know, find mushrooms and take mushrooms and then watch their favorite funny movie and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not,
which is fine. You know, if that's what people want to do, you know, there's nothing, well, usually no harm in that, but
yeah, as long as it's legal and stuff like that. But yeah. But to be used as a medicine and used with intention, it's amazing how we can put this intention in our heart and in our mind. And then when we get in that space, again, it's almost like that little voice that's always arguing with us, the ego, however you describe that. It's like that just gets quiet for a second.
Yeah.
And I feel like psychedelics didn't solve all my problems or like anything like that, but they just showed me a different space. And I was able to walk from those experiences and then that reconnection in your brain, whatever it is, I was able to like use critical thinking like I hadn't in a long time, especially when it came to a lot of beliefs that were long held.
So what do you mean?
Things that didn't serve me.
You were able to use more critical thinking because of psychedelics.
Well, the way I was raised, it was a very high demand community religion. And so there was just a lot of dogma that it was just absolute. And once you make those agreements, once you hold on to those constructs, it's such a huge part of everything you are. In fact, you know, by the time I was probably 15, 16 with experiences I had, the church I belonged to, the Elders Church had become my identity. And so in a lot of ways, it's like I kind of built a cocoon around myself. And psychedelics, it's not like it ripped it off, but my very first experience, it's almost just like I poked a hole through the cocoon. Okay. And there was just kind of a new viewpoint and a new vantage point. And then, you know, over the next few months, it's interesting because I just started to look at things and ask questions and get grounded on how I felt about them. But it was a process that helped me, when I say critical thinking, just kind of think more about myself and go, you know I was raised with this construct and it was very demanding, but how do I feel about this? To be specific, you know, you never drink. There was many around me that taught me that, you know, it keeps you away from the spirit. Even evil spirits can come and possess your body when you use alcohol. And so the first time I experienced even alcohol, you know, as an adult, I'm 40. but I just remember thinking, you know, how do I feel about this? I've been told, you know, how I should feel, but not even to disrespect anyone or the way I was raised, but how do I feel? And so little steps like that, it just kind of helped me to think for myself.
So when you were going through this process, did you work through it with somebody or was this a period of self-reflection?
Well, during a lot of my journey, there was a time that I spent a lot of time in solitude. Mm-hmm. Are you talking specifically about the journey or just the...
Well, I guess mostly like the psychedelic portion of it. Like you had these psychedelic experiences.
Yeah.
How did you go about processing that?
The first time I experienced it, I'd gone on a walk with my sister Shay, mm-hmm. and she talked about how much it had really helped her and helped her with underlying depression. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people talk about it, it sometimes feels like years of therapy in an hour.
Yeah.
And so she told me about that. And so we found a safe environment, you know, a group that knew how to handle the medicine. Mm-hmm. And so during the process and after, I had people I could ask questions to.
Yeah.
I had people that I, you know, if there's something I was experiencing or something that came up, I was able to run that by them. And then also periods of just solitude too, where I would just sit with these things and kind of clear the waters. It's almost like that alone time was one of the first times that, at least in my adult life, that I felt like, okay, I'm just going to work on connecting with pure Skylar. And, you know, it was all part of all the processing I went through. There's so much thing in the last, you know, few years that I've learned, that I've gone through. But during these stages, this the few times that I've had psilocybin, it's amazing. It was just a springboard to get to that clear space and to find kind of that peace with myself.
So you mentioned you sat down and you found pure Skylar. This is a question I'm kind of curious about with people who do psychedelics, because it gets rid of a lot of the extraneous parts of us.
Yeah.
It gets rid of a lot of the conditioning. What do you think is like our pure, what do you think is pure Skylar? What do you think is just made up from, you know, experiences with family, other people, society? And what do you think is like at the essence of Skylar?
Well, When I shared my first experience, my first podcast, I talked about how it helped me kind of connect with my inner child. Mm-hmm. My experience of it is I just think we come into this planet just naked. Uh-huh. We come here. We don't have a name yet. Sure. We don't have any constructs. And we're just there experiencing things. Mm-hmm. And psychedelics was a way to kind of help strip maybe some of those concepts and agreements that I made, whether I made them consciously, whether it was something that I was taught from when I was a tiny kid, so it was just kind of automatically there. Mm-hmm. It brought me to that space where I could, I just felt comfortable processing and questioning anything and everything. Mm-hmm. And then when I did, I was able to just resonate and let it go. So it helped me connect with that pure space, you know, that almost like that little pure kid in you. I talked about how in one of my first journeys, I started dancing at one point, and I felt that joy, that purity, and that innocence. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's there. Where did this come from? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I realized that like innocence is never lost. It's just something we forget. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, that pure sky, that pure space is just where we get to the point where we're able to decide for ourselves what resonates with us, and anything that we're not, it's so much easier to let go of.
Yeah.
With the assistance of psychedelics.
Do you think, I mean, did that have effects in your life though? Like, was it all easy to let go of it, or was it, did it have like a...
It was challenging.
Consequences.
It was challenging. Well, it was one, you know, even the whole process, I even outside of plant medicine, and it helped me so much through this, but you know, I was going through a divorce, mm-hmm. Went through what a lot of people refer to as a faith crisis, where you're reevaluating a lot of things, mm-hmm. but going through this process, and even with the psychedelics, and that's why you talk about how integration is so important. There was times that it was just, I felt so like disoriented. Like I didn't know which way was up, which way was down. And again, now I look at it, and now being on the other side of that, mm-hmm. and being able to let go of so many constructs, even fear, even shame, yeah. things that I'd carried, it's been just phenomenal.
Wow. So you're happier on where you're at now than you were 2 years ago.
Yes. And there's things that I miss. And there's things that I still cherish. So many things I cherish about my upbringing, mm-hmm. Being raised in the community that I was raised in, all of those things.
And maybe this is a good time to tell, we've been friends for 30 years, and we grew up in the same neighborhood, so a lot of my experiences were the same as Skyler's experiences.
We were scout troops together. I remember one time we went camping, and we bought Swedish fish by the pound, but it was on sale, so we had like 5 pounds. And I will tell you, and I've had to get this off my chest for a long time, so this is good. This will be cathartic for me. To this day, I hate Swedish fish. We ate it by the fistful, and it was one of my favorites, but yeah, not anymore.
I remember one time, we would go on campouts, okay? And at the time, it was like the scoutmaster would roll up in a pickup truck and just go down the street.
Yeah.
Pick up whatever kids.
You throw your bag in, jump in the back.
And Skyler just throws a sleeping bag in the back of this truck. And I'm like, what you got for dinner? And he's just got this can of beans. And that's all he's going to eat for like 2 days. It's just one can of beans, which he proceeds to stick in the fire, puts like a knife in it to pop the top. And then that was your meal for 2 days.
I traveled light on those on those adventures.
And one time you forgot your sleeping bag, and I think we had to share one.
And the whole point of the scouting was to be prepared. I was like the one that didn't. But it was funny because I would participate. I would go to stuff. Mm-hmm. But you'd sit through a thing to get the badge, but I never worry about the paperwork. So I think I'm still like the original level. I'm like one past star, maybe.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Well, did you get your eagle?
I got my eagle, yeah. I'm a doctor. After
that's what happens. So,
yeah, if you got your eagle, you could have been a doctor.
Yeah, no, I could have, but then I'd have to have gotten my eagle. So that's worse than I think the medical school. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, being my first guest. I think you did a great job. You don't really mumble or spit when you talk.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, you haven't been too fidgety. I think you've done such a great job, Scott. Okay. So, but yeah, just one more time, if you want to just talk a little bit about your clinic, let them know, you know, if you're interested in this type of treatment, how can they How can they get that going?
So my clinic's in St. George, Utah. It's called Satori Health and Wellness. And we focus mainly on ketamine therapy there, ketamine-assisted psychotherapy.
Yeah.
I also give a fair amount of lectures and trainings for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. I'm going to be speaking to the Utah Psychological Association here in a month or so.
Awesome.
So if people want to learn more, especially about the therapeutic aspect of it or the psychotherapeutic aspect, you can just reach me. My email is scott@theketamineclinic.com, all one word. And I'm always happy to talk about how people can improve their ketamine experiences, because it's always been a passion of mine. Not all ketamine clinics are created equal. So I want people to have the best psychedelic treatment out there.
I love it. So yeah, thanks again for coming on. And I have a can of beans and a knife.
Oh,
so I'm gonna feed you dinner. So thank you guys for joining us. As always, you can watch this podcast in video format, Facebook and YouTube. It's also available through Spotify, Apple, all the places that you listen to podcasts. And we have an Instagram account and a TikTok @Soul Surrender Show. So we will see you on the next show. Thanks again, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Yep.